It's yes, it's the NPR Colors, Neighborhood Public Radio Colors. Right. So we're back on the air here, and we're here with a neighbor of sorts, Ruth.
Lucy.
Oh, Lucy. I'm sorry. I meet a lot of people, and I confuse names at the best of times. And I'll never call you Ruth again.
That's all right.
Lucy, and you're from what neighborhood?
I'm from the Village.
From the West Village, as they say.
Central Village, right off Fifth Avenue.
Oh, okay. But more downtown.
Downtown, definitely. I just visit uptown.
Uh-huh. For the museums and that sort of thing.
Yeah, museums. Doctor's appointments are big up here.
Oh, are they? Doctor's appointments. So we should have some doctors on the air, probably.
You could. You're in the land of everything from plastic surgery to dental care.
Oh yes. A lot of doctors who help you feel better about yourself.
Feel better, look better, sound better.
Ah, yes.
You're also in the neighborhood of private schools.
There are a lot of... I notice around 3 o'clock every day, we could do a whole show of just the sound of children in the neighborhood.
It would be great to involve some schools if they had the time.
I think we might do that. We sometimes it's a little hard for us to get into the schools because they don't know...
You introduced yourself to the professional call to the principal's office or... Mm-hmm. The coordinator's office.
Uh-huh. Who knows?
Be a gig.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I mean, we are working with the youth education program here at the Whitney too, and so that's.
Oh, sure. They have a natural network.
Yeah, they have something already built in, but we like to build our own networks too.
Yeah.
So.
And all the neighborhoods you're outreaching to, of course, have their public schools.
Mm-hmm.
The PS of each neighborhood.
Right.
It would be fun to sort of establish a flagship school in each of the boroughs, or a couple of them.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So that if you were to draw a map of your network, so to speak, you could, put pins in for the outer boroughs, Far Rockaway, and...
We need to get some Far Rockaway in here.
You do. I mean, it would be fun to extend your reach that way.
Mm-hmm. I think we're trying.
Create an audio map of New York.
So what do you do for a living?
Absolutely nothing.
Really? Have you done that all your life?
No. I stopped doing one kind of work, and now I'm what we call a gleaner.
A gleaner?
Yes. If you know the films of Agnès Varda, for example, La Glaneuse.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, a gleaner is someone who picks things up.
Uh-huh.
Could be... redeemables.
Uh-huh.
Could be...
like bottles and cans and that sort of thing?
Uh-huh. Or could be, as in the famous French painter Millet, picks up what's left of potatoes and root vegetables in the stubble of the fields.
Yeah, uh-huh.
In my case, I pick up images and ideas.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So are you a... painter, sculptor, installation artist?
An artist without a portfolio.
Oh, nice. I think we are artists without portfolio as well.
Well, you've got a medium.
We do have a medium of sorts.
And your voices are arriving all the time.
I know. Look at this. We got a whole troop of people in here that are...
an influx.
They're ready to sign up for radio shows, I think.
Well, that's great. Perhaps you're eager to go greet them.
Perhaps, but I'm not finished talking to you, Lucy. So what job did you do before you became a gleaner?
I was curator, exhibitions curator.
Oh, really? Where?
Up the street at the Smithsonian's National Design Museum.
Ah, I see.
On Fifth Avenue and 91st Street.
And thus, we should really take your comments about our installation very seriously.
Don't take anything I say seriously.
Oh, I will.
But this is...
You can't convince me not to.
New York. And I have to say, if you're looking for funky, you've got it.
Well, that's good. We're down with funky.
Uh-huh. It looks like you've airdropped into Upper Madison from... somewhere else, let's just say that.
Well, we usually have our radio station somewhere else.
Yes.
It's a very odd fit for us, but it seems to get, I mean, honestly, we just put a sign in the window about a month ago, and it automatically had people turning their heads.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the funky is, they go a block up, and everybody's fighting for their attention with slick.
Yes.
And down here, they walk along, and then suddenly there's this funky thing, and they're like, what the hell is that? And it's kind of been working for us, I yeah. have to say. I mean, I'm not discounting what you're saying
you
either.
You put a sign in the window, you mean this one?
Yeah.
Just a few days ago.
Oh, we had one up about a month ago. It's actually the one that's on the wall over there.
Oh, yeah.
And we just put it in the window while we were working on the space.
Okay, that would do it.
Yeah, and we kept, like, looking out, and people would... there was one woman who actually... I think we'll probably tell this story a million times before it's all done, but... who actually stood in front of the window, and while I was with one of the curators talking about how we were going to set things up here, and the sign was right here, and we're looking out there, out the window, this woman came up with her furs and her dyed red hair with some very gray roots, and very small gray roots, but and stood there looking into the space with a look of disdain, looked down at some of the writing that we have in the window, also with not a lot of interest. While we're standing looking right out the window, she would not make eye contact. I even waved a little bit. Then she looked just beyond us and shook her head and walked away.
She was remembering perhaps what was here before.
I know. She was sad. There were no shoes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I like your use of the shoe bays here.
You like that?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
That has a certain... poignant irony. This used to be a shoe store.
Yes. Now it's a junked toy store.
Yeah. Now, did you install this...
The orange cone?
It's not... Now, that's not a cone.
Well, the...
shall we call it...
An orange cylinder?
A bollard?
Ooh,
you know that word?
I don't know that word.
You
it's
know,
a good word.
I'm distinguishing it from a cone, because uh-huh. cones are big in New York.
Yeah,
as
they
in
are.
Coned off area.
Yeah. No, this is not a cone.
No, but did you put that there?
No, we did not put that there.
Well, that's good. You should keep it there.
I know. It seems to be working
it's
for us.
It's very New York. What I suggest...
Kevin Everson leaving the building.
Signing off. It's important as establishing a marker opposite your door.
Yeah.
There could be something like that.
See, look at this.
See,
we have a bus stop here. See?
You've got a bus stop. You are in a great spot.
It's beautiful.
It's prime. And I'm just wondering if you're maximizing it. I mean, even to the extent mm-hmm. that you want to.
I'm not sure that we are, to be honest. But I'm also, you know, we have limited resources. And so I think we're trying to balance, like, building good programming and getting people involved with putting on a good display here in the window.
Right, I understand. Programming is the priority.
Yeah, exactly.
You seem to have quite a few friends.
We do, and we're getting more every day. It's
well
very
then
interesting.
As you note, you know, activity mm-hmm. generates activity.
It does.
If there's one person shopping for something at a counter, another mm-hmm. one is going to stop.
Exactly.
So you might have some of your friends
mm-hmm.
kind of around from time to time.
I think we will. And we have it. On the press preview, we had interviews going on here, and it was a constant stream of people in
especially
and out.
Especially if your friends are either well-dressed or interestingly dressed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or
big cowboy hats.
Head-turners.
Head-turners. Pretty people.
Pretty people or people who were nice to look at.
Uh-huh.
Because this is Madison Avenue.
Well, could I stand out there? Am I all right looking?
You're nice to look at.
Yeah.
You would not be the first choice to stand out
no.
there.
No. And why do I fail the test? I'm okay with criticism.
I can't describe it for you. If
you can't?
No, you can't stand them.
No, oh, really?
There's one.
Oh, what about her? She
yes,
could
she
stand,
can
stand
up.
See? See how... Where are you... Oh, you're going to do your presentation.
Good.
Okay.
Good luck. Bye.
Jessamine Lavelle has left the building. That's my girlfriend. You
well,
you
yeah.
helped me out a great deal right there. Thank you. I appreciate that.
She is going to bring her class, presumably, or she's going to talk it up at Parsons?
She's going to Parsons, but she has her own vibrant career as a photographer, and
she's
going
not
to be talking
about this at Parsons.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Okay.
I try to get her to just talk about me all the time,
and it doesn't work so far?
No, not so much.
Did you choose your glasses?
No, I chose my glasses.
Uh-huh.
Are they okay?
It's a step in the right direction.
But the hoodie from Headlands Center for the Arts, not so good?
It's okay. It's fun. I can't say exactly what it is, but I put her out there sooner than I put you out there. Or you could be out there together.
Yeah.
Now, here's one of your buddies.
That's Kevin.
Cool. He can be out
there. Kevin Everson, you can hang out front, apparently.
Yeah, a poster person.
You'll bring people in for us if you just hang out front. I think it's because you're black.
Yeah,
I'm not.
We need a range of, as they say, demographics.
We do. We try to have a range of demographics here.
You appear too.
What about you? Could you stand out front?
No.
You're fun
not
to look
even
at.
Not close. Oh,
really?
No.
I enjoy looking at you. I've been looking at you for a good half hour now, probably.
Yeah, that's fine, but it's not the demographic you're looking for.
What demographic are we looking for?
Well, okay, there's one. There she is.
Oh, she's back.
She's back.
Uh huh.
Hey,
oh, there was a key problem.
Yeah.
She's our demographic.
Yeah.
But
something
you're our demographic too.
I'm your backgrounder.
I'm your back. You're my backgrounder, or our backgrounder.
Yeah. I'm just sort of here as a little coach with perspective.
Really?
Yeah.
But
I'm not. You're up on Madison Avenue. If you want to bring them in,
mm-hmm.
Besides their doormen and their taxi drivers.
Oh no, we're happy just bringing in their doormen and taxi drivers.
It would be fun to have a couple of classics, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably would.
I had a friend who would love to have spoken to you. She is now deceased, but she died at 102 just last winter.
Oh, my goodness.
Lived just down the street. I would visit her in this neighborhood. She lived in the same little apartment in Manhattan all her working life.
Uh-huh.
Did her own shopping and banking, and she was tough.
Really?
Very nice obit in New York Times. It would be nice to have...
a few of those people.
What the heck with that? You're doing fine as it is.
Well,
now,
thank
you. Are you also a radio person, or are you more an art person?
Oh, God. I'm not sure I know the difference, honestly.
Okay.
I mean, my history is that I got an MFA at an art school in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and then I stopped doing my art for a period of time because I was teaching at a community college, and so I started volunteering at a radio station. As a way to have a creative outlet. And then when I was invited to continue doing work, because people knew my work from before,
right.
It sort of evolved into this.
Great. But does NPR have a date with you? Because they should.
Oh, yeah. They came to us this week.
Okay.
I mean, you mean National Public Radio.
Excuse me.
The other NPR.
The other NPR.
Yeah. They came, Karen Michelle came, and she's a cultural correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
She did a great piece about critical art ensemble, Steve Kurtz.
Great.
And some other good pieces in the past. And apparently, from talking to us, has been involved as a radio artist. Like, she was one of the first people we've talked to in a very long time who really understood the difference between, say, sound art and radio art.
Hmm.
And she came and interviewed us and then hung around for a while and we talked, and I think she's going to come back and do some pieces on the air with us. But we're going to be on, I think, Morning Edition or All Things Considered this weekend. It's a little scary.
Yes, it's scary. They'll bring them in.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to use what they have from you already, or are they going to make another visit for that?
No, they did the interview while they were here. They interviewed us, and they interviewed the curators, and then they have access to our archives, which are all online at neighborhoodpublicradio.org.
Yes.
And they asked us for a little bit of extra archive because they wanted a piece that we did back in 2004, which was... 24 hours of our local affiliate in San Francisco, KQED.
KQED.
Yeah. We recorded 24 hours of KQED and then cut out everything but the sponsorship messages.
Right.
And you know the sponsorship messages that you hear on National Public Radio. They're little, they're like, you know, this programming brought to you by, and actually they're not sponsorship, they're underwriting.
Yes, that's
whatever.
Right.
And that was like 12 minutes in the end, which is not insubstantial. We have little plaques over there that show like who was mentioned and give you an idea of how often they were mentioned. So they're actually going to play a bit of that piece, I believe.
How did they know about it though? From dipping into your archives?
No, I told them about in our interview.
Good.
We're very uncertain as to how it's going to turn out.
Because they're doing the editing and everything.
Yeah, they're
it's
their
piece. So
they're
doing a radio piece on your radio piece.
Yeah. But you know, I felt really good. That's Terry. Terry, right? Yeah, you.
Okay, she's one of the people you need.
You're one of you guys came by earlier. Come back.
Good.
So, I don't know if they can hear us out there.
I don't think so.
Anyway, Karen was a delight. She was actually really great to have, and she's been great to correspond with.
Good.
And we really look forward to having her on to do some more stuff. Even though she does work for the evil behemoth of National Public Radio.
We can't call them. You listen, it's better than a whole lot of other things.
No, that's what we say all the time, is that they're better, they're the best thing on the radio, but is it really the best we can do?
I don't know. I'm interested to see how they are, to some extent, reinventing themselves. I've been picking up on Radio Lab lately. I don't know if you
Yeah, Radio Lab is an interesting thing.
I always loved Robert Krulwich.
Uh-huh.
He was doing this early on, this snip and clip business, way before.
But that's some very interesting stuff, and that's definitely one of the areas we like to explore. And, you know, they have StoryCorps. That's an interesting project.
I was going to tell you, the other really moving thing is I did a StoryCorps interview in Grand Central.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's a really important and beautiful project.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I mean,
I agree.
It's somewhere on the spectrum of community.
Mm-hmm.
I
think it's very interesting that they started about the same time that we did, and
really?
We didn't know about each other. Yeah, there are a lot of projects that started around the same time we did that didn't know about each other, and we're all sort of seem to be converging a lot, and that's very interesting to me.
That should be encouraging for radio.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of time in Canada, where the CBC used to be the a great institution to admire.
Mm-hmm.
They're going through some changes.
Oh.
In the process of which they're losing some great programming. And I know good programming.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a source of sorrow and dismay. And I don't think they've understood what radio does now or can do.
I don't know that many people do, because they've been so alienated from the medium for so long.
What CBC, bless their hearts, is trying to do is bring in a younger audience, which they try to do by playing a hard to listen to music.
Mm. Oh, is that?
For example. Yeah.
That's a problem? I mean, what do you mean by hard to listen to music?
Well,
like conceptually driven sound pieces, or?
It's hard for me to listen to, I should qualify.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of it. What I would fault them with is, I guess, a lack of variety in their music programming.
Uh-huh.
A lot of squeal.
Mm-hmm.
Not much sound.
Uh-huh.
But anyway.
I would say that any radio station that is all one sound is, especially if they claim to be some sort of representative body, is going to be a problem in our minds.
I think they felt they were too classical too much of the time.
I see.
They have a talk channel and they have a music channel, and the music channel was too classical.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the thing is, the genius of those two of the weekday classical programs they had was their programmed by geniuses who went from classical to pop and back and everything in between, and not randomly.
Sort of a Glenn Gould kind of stuff.
Sort of like that.
Uh-huh.
And all their juxtapositions, which is what you want in radio, were fascinating. And they could find a line from Glenn Gould to someone else. And then tangent off that. It was a fantastically ingenious mix, so that if you wanted to look the whole show as a shape and texture.
Right.
That's going.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It's really unfortunate.
Yeah. When and what that, I mean, to my mind, what that signals is what we're seeing in terms of any nationalization of programming, and that's our problem with National Public Radio. Really, is that it is such a large entity, and it is branding itself on a national level that it has to ignore more localized interests. And when you do that, you also need a certain amount of uniformity.
Yes.
And when you have uniformity, you lose the ability to, you know, tailor your program. You know, I used to DJ at KLX Berkeley, a wonderful freeform radio station. But even there, I felt restricted a bit by FCC regulation and the necessary tendency to self-censor around that. But what the freedom that I had there was to come in and know, like, what the first two or three CDs I would play would be.
Yes.
And then I just would run through the library and pull, oh, that makes me think of this. And so it was a creative process all by itself.
Well, exactly. One of the very few battles that CBC fans won was when the CBC tried to take off the really local grassroots programming. Mm-hmm. Canada, like the States, is here's one. A big country.
Uh-huh.
Maritime provinces. Quebec and Ontario, heavily populated, most people next to the border. Prairies.
Mm-hmm.
Rockies. And apparently there was a landmark program that had been on in the Maritimes for, I don't know, a couple of decades, where some of the language and references were known only to Maritimers.
Mm-hmm.
And there were fabulously detailed weather and marine weather reports.
Uh-huh.
Things that people relied on, and it was at the dinner hour.
Oh,
it
great.
Was an institution.
Uh-huh.
CBC tried to take it out in the interest of being national.
Uh-huh.
And people fought, and I think they won that one. I understand your point completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see the place for a national repository for programming. I don't think that's what we want to engage in, but I can see the place for that. But there is always a need. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who works for a commercial station, an AM station in the Bay Area, and he was at that time doing the phones a lot. So he'd answer the phone whenever some crank in the mountain areas would call in. And he said, I can't take any more of these calls from like some crazy lady in Santa Rosa who's wondering why there are helicopters flying over her house. I can't do it. And I'm like, but you know, your station has taglines on the radio all the time, the news you need now. And they broadcast to such a wide area, they can't possibly have the news I need anytime because they're too distracted.
Right.
If there was a little station on the hill just a mile from her house that was broadcasting and they had to sort of keep it alive for a while. That guy came in earlier. He's an intro. They had to keep that alive for a while. There would be somebody around. There would be a phone number. She could call in. She could say, what's that helicopter flying over? And he could either look, you know, he, she, whoever was there could look out the window, see what the helicopter is, either figure it out from there or call the local police or, there would be energy to figure it out for her. And what ultimately I derived from that, because I tend to go on long flights of fancy in these arguments, is that if we had a radio station for every square mile that could operate like that, we'd have a lot less crazy paranoid people out in the boondocks. So it's really a mental health initiative that we're doing here.
Well, also radio's company.
It is. It is. It keeps people from getting too bored.
Well, not just bored, but...
Or lonely.
Knowing, being reminded that there, that would be a good gentleman to have. He's local.
Is he? Do you
He's
know
not,
him?
No. Oh. But just notice the tie and the tweed jacket.
Well, yes.
He's not going to stop. What I notice is, from just sitting here, people look if there are people recording here.
Oh, yeah.
That's your best sign.
Oh, I know.
So if you're... If you're just, you know, if you are short on staff and not many people, I would move them up to the front if you want to bring people in, rather than in the back.
I agree.
You don't have to be recording.
Well,
do you?
No, we don't have to, but we do.
I mean, the minute, but if it's among yourselves,
yeah.
Rather than have the window empty.
Well, this is sort of what I was talking about with the square mile thing. Like, if you have a station that's on for certain hours, you fill the airtime somehow.
Yes.
And we will. I mean, we do certainly let the mics go down sometimes because we need a rest.
Yeah, but I mean, rather than having your team sitting back there, even if they're doing exactly what they're doing,
yeah,
they should sit here. No. If I'm not here.
Okay.
Because when I came by, I looked because there were people in the window. And I was intrigued. Oh, what are they doing in the window?
Right.
Oh, it's mics.
Yeah.
They're talking.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think you were really doing an interview. I thought it was a setup.
No.
But it's better than any sign. After being in the window, and you can make some eye contact, I think you're going to get more people stopping that way.
Okay. We'll do it. But you know what other thing helps us out quite a bit? Is after we talk to people like you, they go out and tell their friends.
Yeah? What about this guy?
This guy can come in. Come on in. Welcome. You can come in, too. Come on in.
See? I'm not sure.
I know, but they figure it out.
Okay, they're not sure.
Welcome to Neighborhood Public Radio. I've just been talking to Lucy here about what we can do to get more people to come in and be on the radio. Huh?
I'm from Chile.
You're from Chile? Would you like to talk on the radio?
Doesn't matter. You speak beautifully. I'm going to exit.
Thank you so much.
See you again.
Please do come back.
See, I knew you didn't speak English, but you gotta watch
it. We can work with that. We've been working with it for a while.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lucy. Have a wonderful evening. Afternoon.